Okay, we were just reading some quotes off about the fossil record. We had one man, professor of medical genetics, said we can't find transitions. Here's another gentleman, Gary Parker. He's got his biology degree and an education degree. Evolutionists have never been able to agree on any theory about how fish evolved or from what invertebrate group. The fossil evidence shows fish have always been fish. Oh, yeah. The wife is passing around a sheet of paper with our, you can sign up for it. You don't have to. It's our newsletter, electronic newsletter, if you'd like to get a hold of that. Now, textbooks or artwork. Which one's true? Textbooks or artwork? We're going to look at some fossil evidence here. Is that real evolution or not? I just came back from Washington, D.C., went to the Smithsonian Institute, looked at all the fossil evidence they had there. If you look closely at the fossils, you'll see they're different colors. The actual fossil they found is very little. The rest of it was added in. Yeah, even the last one's not a fossil yet. You're getting there.
Almost.
When I worked at Microsoft, I was 40 years old, and I was told I was older than dirt because I was older than 98% of the people that worked there, and I was only 40. I was hired, I think, as the token old person. Okay, critical thinking question. This is what we need to train our youth on. When they see these pictures in textbooks, they should at least think about this or ask this question politely. How much of the fossil was actually found and how much was drawn in by the artist? That's a good question to be asked. Yes?
Is that one fossil?
No, a lot of times it is one fossil. Sometimes it's been two, like Piltdown Man was two different creatures combined. Other ones they've made mistakes on too. But most of the time it's just a single fossil and they just add things in. The one in the middle and the one on the right there are pictures of somebody. Anybody here named Lucy? Yes, that they call that Lucy there. That's one of their famous intermediates there. It has been debunked over and over again, but they will not get rid of it out of the textbooks. Real evolution. There are some real transitional creatures, if we could find them. Yes, gator birds. We don't even find those in Florida yet. The bunny cat. We haven't found any of those. Now, when you do, this is what I like to use. When I train students, I make one per page, so I blow it up real nice and big. Youth and children love things like that. If you're going to teach the youth, don't turn it into a science class. You'll bore them to death. Turn it into something you can sneak in the science and have a little bit of fun doing it. And this is one of my things you do. You can find these all over the internet too. Anybody found any of those creatures? Well, we did have a song about the one on the left. Bird Dog? Everly Brothers? Johnny is a Joker? My mind wanders when I see these things. Just wanders. You can be talking to me and I can be wandering somewhere else. I trained our son-in-law on a very key thing about being a husband. This is important in being a husband. I trained him. Like, you don't mind me telling this, do you? You're still not doing what you're doing. I trained him how to look like he's listening to his wife, think about something else, and how to shake your head at the right time. That's important for husbands to be able to do, isn't it? Now, of all those up there, there is one that does exist. We find them in churches. Wolves in sheep's clothing. But you can have a little fun with some of these. Now, let's take a look at something called history of mistakes. They've broken our trust over and over again. Now, I want to show you how easy anthropology... How many have had courses in anthropology? I'm going to show you how... And it was easy, wasn't it? I'm going to show how easy this is. Where did we find Nebraska Man? Nebraska. See how easy this stuff is. It's not hard at all, is it? Nebraska Man. This was an amazing find. They found so much evidence for Nebraska Man, they were able to reconstruct the entire Nebraska Man, his wife, and family. Tremendous amount of fossil evidence. What did they find? A tooth. One tooth is all they found. And from that, they reconstructed the entire family. That's not science, folks. That's evolutionism, but not science. Later, they found the rest of the fossil went with the tooth. It was not an ape's tooth. It was not a human tooth. It was a pig's tooth. It was the first time a pig ever made a monkey out of a man. Anybody here from Nebraska? Okay. If that's what they were teaching at the University of Nebraska, what does the N stand for on their football helmets? Knowledge. Sorry. Now be careful. You go to a high school and do that, half of them don't get it. They have to have a spell checker. You knew it right away, didn't you? Good. Okay, so Nebraska Man was a mistake. That one didn't last for very long. But the next one, Piltdown Man, lasted for 50 years in the textbooks as the proof of evolutionism. Then they found out the whole thing was a fraud. Somebody had taken some fragments of a skull from an ape, some teeth, human jawbone, filed the teeth down to make them look like they fit, chemically stained these bones to make them look old, went out there and buried them in the strata. Somebody who believed in evolution discovered them, made the claim this is a human ancestor, and it lasted for 50 years in the public education system when the whole thing was a fraud from the beginning. What does that tell you about evolutionism? It doesn't matter about the evidence. All that matters is we believe in evolution. Archaeoraptor. That's the one in the upper right-hand corner there. The famous feathered dinosaur. Pictures and pictures of this creature in National Geographic. The feathered dinosaur. Transition between a dinosaur and a bird. Colored pictures even, too. Wow, that's amazing. Problem. They had pasted on the feather imprints on the bones. The whole thing was a fraud. But yet, there's National Geographic promoting this, several universities and schools and media promoting the feathered dinosaur. The whole thing was a fraud. This is evolutionism. Be careful what's happening out there. Coelacanth, they talk about that. Haeckel's fraud. That's these pictures down here. In the late 1800s, Haeckel had these pictures how we're all coming from the same creature, how these embryos from different creatures, including humans, all look the same. Therefore, we all evolved from a common ancestor. Before the 1900s came about, he was charged with fraud also. He had drawn on the pictures to make them look similar. But yet, we still see pictures like this, similar to this, in our textbooks, even though it's been disproved for over 100 years. The DNA clearly says we did not come from the same ancestor. How many here have 48 chromosomes? Anybody here have 48 chromosomes? Anybody want 48? Good, so no apes or bananas in here. How many have 46? We have no human beings in here? Okay, we got one human being in here. We got two human beings. Okay. We're starting to evolve. I can see this. Yeah, 46 chromosomes is a characteristic of being a human being. Then we got junk DNA. They still teach this in our schools. What a shame, because it's been debunked. Not by just Christians, but evolutionists. There's been a worldwide study in this. They said, oh, only about 3% of our DNA is useful. Why? Because the rest of it doesn't code for making proteins. Only that 3% that codes for making proteins, that's the real DNA. The rest is just junk, left over from our days of evolving. And that's what they teach in the schools today. No teacher, any teacher that's teaching that should not be in that academic subject. Because they're not up to date. It's been well proven now that there's no such thing as junk DNA. It all has a use. Some of it, a lot of it doesn't code for making proteins, but a lot of it is there for turning switches on and off during our development. You take that out, folks, you're dead. No such thing as junk DNA. That's going away for quite a while. We got a lot of teachers out there that just simply are not up to speed on their subject, or they're so intimidated that they can't tell the truth. Fossil horses. They have this small horse, medium horse, larger horses all lined up. You know, I can do the same thing with dogs. Doesn't mean they evolved, does it? But they also don't tell in the textbooks that we find all these different transitions, all these different horses at the same level. It means they all lived at the same time. We even find them in different orders where the biggest are lower than the smallest. They don't talk about things like that. Then the Miller experiment, we're going to save that to chapter 4. Why? That's going to be a winner, folks. We're going to demolish Darwin today. Now, the Cayman explosion is my favorite one to use when I'm talking about fossil. My second favorite one is this one here, fossil graveyards. Evolutionists have a hard time with this. Why? Well, let's take a look. How do you become a fossil? Anybody know how you become a fossil?
Die and get buried quickly.
Well, it doesn't have to be that order. I just thought I'd point that out. But eventually you're dead. And you get buried rapidly. That's the key. You've got to be buried rapidly. Then you have the potential to become a fossil. So, key here is you've got to be buried rapidly. Well, we find these things called fossil graveyards all over the world. That's where we find hundreds, sometimes thousands of creatures all buried together, many from different ecological zones. For example, Nebraska, 9,000 animals have been discovered. Look at these different creatures that have been discovered there, all buried together. And here's an interesting point. Every one of these fossil graveyards I'm going to talk about are all in sediments laid down by water. What does that sound like? Some kind of a flood. Those creatures don't live in the same zones, do they? Yet there they all are in Nebraska. All with giant K's for knowledge. No, I didn't do that. Wyoming. We don't like Wyoming because they beat our team. Actually, they didn't beat us. We lost it. 483 dinosaurs spread out over 7 miles. That's a pretty big flood, isn't it? To bury 483 dinosaurs. Utah, over 12,000 bones of different animals, including 10 different kinds of dinosaurs. Yes, we do find dinosaurs with many different kinds of creatures, including mammals, buried together. You won't hear that in the textbooks either. Incidentally, dinosaurs, we should never, ever lose that one. We have all the scientific evidence. We have so much scientific evidence for dinosaurs living at the same time as people. It's a no-brainer. We should win it. We should never lose that one. We need to train our youth on that one. Next week, I'm going to have a section on there. The four essentials to teach about dinosaurs. We need to teach four things. And it's a winner. We can't lose.
Question.
Yes?
So these layers, Cambrian on up, in that picture, it showed the humans on the top.
Yes.
Okay. Is that like representative of depth in the Earth's crust, more or less?
It's supposed to. Is it a representation of depth, all these different fossils with humans on? It's supposed to be. But it's not what we find. Because we find dinosaurs right up there on the top.
It doesn't seem like anybody ever points out finding like human bones with dinosaur bones.
Good question. No, you got 10 push-ups off on that. I'm still counting. You must like push-ups because you're not asking any questions, are you? And I know that table back there just can't wait to do their push-ups. Yes. Now I got some people awake and watching. We have not found
any humans and dinosaur fossils together yet. But we haven't found many human fossils with lions either, have we?
Or with coelacanth fish. We went supposedly 70 million years with no fossils of coelacanths at all, according to evolutionists. Then they're still living.
We probably most likely would not live next door to dinosaurs. How many have ever played around with lizards about this long? That's pretty long for some of you. You probably wouldn't want to have that carried around with you, would you? Especially if you woke up in bed and there's one looking at you. You wouldn't like that too much. But how about one that stood this tall? That's not a real big dinosaur now, is it? How'd you like to have something about this tall, walking around two legs with big teeth looking at you? How about 20 feet tall? You wouldn't want to live next door to them. So you probably try and live away from them. That would be one reason. Second, we don't have good fossil potential because we're mobile, we're smarter than these creatures, and we're going to try and escape floods. And what happens when you escape flood and you drown? Well, simple. You go down to the bottom and get buried, don't you? No. How many agree with that? Add 10 push-ups on. What happens when you drown?
Simply the human body floats in it.
Right. We float, get scavenged, and we don't have good fossil potential then. But absence of evidence is not proof of the claim. So we haven't found any yet. Doesn't mean we won't. But we don't find human fossils with a lot of things. We have very few, when you look at the total number of fossil records, very few human fossils.
Really. I would have thought that our Christian argument is that a lot of these fossils were laid down during the flood.
Yes.
Which basically the flood took roughly a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these dead creatures are all in this water at the same time.
Yes.
And I would have thought we would have at that point find these human, all animals mixed together. But it doesn't seem like that's the case.
No, we haven't found humans mixed with too many things. We have found other creatures here and there, but generally it's humans with humans. It's one of the things we're finding with humans, we tend to bury their dead. Neanderthals buried their dead. They were 100% human beings.
And that makes sense of the ones that are buried.
I'm speaking of the flood.
Nobody had a chance to bury anybody. I had heard that some theory about just the concept of, you know, some things would finally sink to the bottom slower than others and stuff like that. But I don't know if there's any good evidence about anything like that.
Go ahead.
In South America, like Peru, they have Ica stones.
Yes.
Yeah, old.
Yeah, the ICA Ica stones. Now, some of those may be very real. I've seen some of them. A lot of them are frauds because they're down there to sell you whatever. But I believe there are some that are very real because I've seen.
Well, what they are is pictures, depictions that have been made that are etched in stone that have aged that are of men with dinosaurs.
We do have a lot of evidence of dinosaurs and people living together. We just haven't found the fossils yet.
We just haven't found it in the fossil evidence yet. It's interesting we haven't been able to.
This won't make you feel bad if I say you don't have good fossil potential, will it? Won't give you nightmares, will it?
Could it be the one reason we don't find human fossils is because God wanted to destroy mankind?
Yep, he did.
He wiped them out completely.
Wiped them out completely. Because we have found, to our knowledge, no pre-flood humans. We found none, to our knowledge. Neanderthals were post-flood humans.
400 million, you would think there would be some.
Yeah.
Unless he wanted to make sure that they were destroyed.
Yep. But we just haven't found anything pre-flood that we know of. It's a good question. Okay, here's another one. Utah, Dinosaur National Monument. Many dinosaur bones, all buried and mangled together. Here's one in Grand Canyon. Now, Grand Canyon is about a mile above sea level. What in the world are these sea creature fossils, nautiloids, doing in the Grand Canyon? Notice what it says there. Billions, that's with a B, of nautiloids in a 7-foot thick area throughout the Grand Canyon. It's as if they were all buried simultaneously, a mile above sea level. That means that area of the country had to be under ocean water at one time. France, another fossil graveyard. Wyoming, the Green River Formation, many different kinds of fossils there. Chile, they just recently found a whale fossil graveyard. Look what it says there. 75 whales, 20 of them completely intact. That is very rapid burial. So fossil graveyards, how did the evolutionists explain this? There were many, many local floods. Question, did anybody ever observe these many, many local floods? No. So what's their story based on? Faith. It's not based on any observational evidence. So now, what would a worldwide flood do? If there really was a worldwide flood, what would it do? Well, we'd expect it to bury billions of things, wouldn't it? And sediments laid down by water. You know what we actually find in the fossil record? Billions of dead things buried in rock layers laid down by water all over the earth. That's exactly what we find. exactly what a worldwide flood would look like. John Morse, anything he writes, I recommend. He's very good. PhD in geologic engineering. At least 95% of all animal fossils are marine invertebrate. They are found in a great variety, but all are well designed for life in the sea. These fossilized marine creatures are typically found in catastrophic deposits. In other words, 95% of known fossils are marine fossils. Why is that? Well, where do they live? In the oceans, water. What creatures are going to be buried on the bottom layers and buried and don't have a chance to escape? Marine creatures. They can't climb up in mountains. And what happens when you have a giant flood? You have volcanic activity. You have tectonic movements, which cause what? Tsunamis. Here's your trick question. What letter does tsunami start with?
T.
Good, good. Okay. You have these tsunamis. Now, what's a tsunami? It's an underwater what? Tidal wave. And it's going along the bottom of, on the floor there, ocean floor. And as it's going along the ocean floor at 50, 60 miles an hour, you can't get out of the way, can you? All those creatures that live on the bottom are instantly buried, aren't they? That's why we find so many marine fossils out there. They can't escape anything. You've got these tsunamis coming after them everywhere. Rapid fossilization. There's a fish with its food still in its stomach. Rapid burial. There's one that didn't get to finish its food. These are just some examples typifying rapid fossilization. What do fish do? Anybody ever watch fish? Now, we know humans will probably float, but fish, what do? They die and sink to the bottom. Everybody, now watch this. Everybody knows that when a fish dies, it sinks down to the bottom and will get buried. Everybody knows that, don't they? I see dissent here. Notice how I did that, though. What was I doing? I was lying, yes. Okay. Could have just said being a politician. But I used the words to get the response I wanted. You ever get these little things over the telephone surveys, and they give you two options? I love it when they do that, because it's usually the logical fallacy of either or. They only give you two choices, but there's a third choice, and I always remind them of that. Or if they do, what race are you? Oh, what an opportunity. You know there's only one race, it's the human race, and I go the whole lecture there. And you know what? They never call me again. No, when fish die, they float too. And they get scavenged. But if there's tsunamis going on under there, there's no escape for them. They're buried instantly. Then we find sea creatures on the tops of every mountain range on this planet. Every mountain range. Fossil whales a third of the way up the Andes Mountains, and they don't have any legs to walk up there. Seashells on top of Mount Everest. How did they get there? The only explanation is the oceans had to cover that mountain at one point in time. We know the mountains weren't always that tall. How did the evolutionists answer this? Well, they have an explanation for everything. The continents sank and they came back up, and they sank and came back up. That's how we got these fossils on top of the mountains. Question, did anybody ever observe the continent sinking? No. So their whole idea is nothing but a faith answer. Has no observational evidence behind it. Also, the continents will not sink. They're made of buoyant. Their sediments are very buoyant. They won't sink. So they're in trouble there.
If they did, they probably wouldn't come back up.
That's correct. So we've had six of the seven evidence of the fossil. My two favorite ones I use, and we should train our youth on this, Cambrian explosion and fossil graveyards. If you have to talk about two, those are the two best ones right there. That puts the evolutionists on a defensive position there. And that brings us to an exercise. What time were we having our next break?
10:32.
Okay, 10:32. That's right. We got plenty of time. Okay, let's turn to page 91. You got another 3.5 minutes. Now think of this as a benefit. You don't have to listen to me for 3.5 minutes. Who's laughing? Oh, okay. She's exempt from push-ups. Okay, let's go ahead and get started on that. Ready, set, go. Okay, time's up. Had a couple up here finish. Anybody else? That's pretty good. All right, let's go through this again. Same process. Anybody notice a repeat question on there? Okay. So you know the important thing. Remember now, the big five, you don't leave here until you get those. Or you can substitute 20 push-ups for each one. Okay, state what chapter in Genesis describes the flood as a worldwide flood? Seven. That was pretty easy. That was your confidence builder there, wasn't it? State why the Genesis flood is an important issue. Anybody get anything on that? Well, it disproves evolution, but to the Christian, it's an important issue because it deals with the false record or the foundation of the gospel. If it was a local flood, that means millions of years of time to lay down all the fossils, which implies death before sin. If it was a worldwide flood, all that would have happened after the fall. So it affects our belief about the gospel. State two evidence support long ages are not necessary. Mount St. Helens could cover a whole lot of them. Mount St. Helens, yes. How about, does it take long ages for coal? Oil? No. Stalactites, right. Any one of those. Long ages are not required for what we observe. Large canyons form rapidly. Polystrate fossils. So a whole list of things in there. Two evidence that demonstrate the fossil record supports the biblical model created after kind and not evolution. Right. Cambrian explosion, no transitions, and fossil graveyards. And you can do the other ones, no transitions. Anything else?
I don't know if this is correct, but that they found very simple organisms and very complex organisms.
Yes, that's exactly. The Cambrian explosion. You
just
gave a more technical explanation than I did. You're just trying to make me look bad. Two evidence support only two this time. I was being generous. Two evidence is why the days were literal days and not long ages.
Mark
10:6. Mark, oh, thank you. Very good. I'm going to take 10 off on that one. You're down to what, 80 now? Yes. Yes. Mark 10, verse 6. Jesus believed man and woman were on the planet from the beginning. He made that statement. Anybody put number of the day?
Yeah.
Evening and morning.
Yeah.
Fourth commandment.
Yeah.
Anybody put death before sin?
Yeah.
Genesis 1:31. You didn't put the genealogies there. Anybody just put the authority of Scripture? I'll accept that one also. Boy, there's so many possible answers. You can't be wrong in this, can you? State why 2 Peter 3:8 is not evidence the Bible supports the days of creation for long ages. That's another repeat one. What does it refer to? End times. What's the key word? As. Turns it into a figure of speech. Therefore, we're taking it out of context if we use it to support long ages. Bonus question. How many of my grandchildren just qualify for nationals in cross country?
At least one.
One, yes. We just found that out. Our 8-year-old qualified for nationals in the 3K, and he doesn't even practice it. He's the one I have targeted for a big champion in the 800 meters. Great speed, great endurance. Just looks like a cartoon when he's running because he's so short. His legs are moving twice as fast as everybody else. Let's go to chapter 3 now. Demonstrate that apologetics is an important part of evangelism and that the Bible has answers and can be defended. This is one of the pieces right there that is killing our youth. They're not being taught the Bible has answers. Oh, just love Jesus. Jesus is all that matters. Well, those are true statements. The Bible says it. I believe it. That settles it. That's not what God told us to do. That's not what he said. So let's take a look at apologetics. What is apologetics? Critical thinking and evolution. Who did Cain marry? How can the first 3 days be literal days without the sun? Ready for that one? Is the Big Bang compatible with the Bible? The gospel of apologetics, and why is the universe so big? That's what we're going to answer here. Our challenges. State what is meant by Christian apologetics, and state two scripture references that support why all Christians should learn and practice apologetics. See now the first 3 days of creation be literal days without the sun. State two reasons why the Big Bang is not compatible with, well, I'll give you one right now, promotes death before sin. Because it's millions and billions of years. You already know one of them right there. It's pretty easy, isn't it? State why Genesis is important to understanding the gospel. So the big five so far. We've had three evidences the days were days. The number of the word day, evening, morning, the fourth commandment, the words of Jesus in Mark 10, verse 6, death before sin. Two problems with adding millions of years in the Bible. First one you put down is death before sin. What's another one? How about Mark 10, verse 6, turns Jesus into being incorrect. Genesis 1:31, God called death and decay very good. So 1 and 2 are very similar. State why the Genesis flood is an important issue. We've had that one. Deals with the foundation for the gospel. How long did it take to make the fossils? In this chapter, we're going to get state one power question and four components of the gospel. In other words, chapter 4, we don't have anymore. We have a whole topic, but we're not going to have any power big five on there. So we get the last two right here. What is apologetics? Well, one, you can go on the defense, or you can go on the offense. But notice this thing. It's the work of giving sound arguments to help people change their lives for Jesus Christ. Nowhere in there do we state apologetics is about winning the argument. This is where many people go to church don't understand apologetics. It is not about winning arguments. It's about bringing down strongholds, anything that keeps people from a knowledge of Jesus Christ. That's why we have to do this. Jesus did it all the time. Paul did it all the time. That should be a warning to us. We should be doing it. Reasons we do apologetics. Number one reason is evangelism. And all the rest of them come in any order. Demonstrates obedience to God's word. Equips believers to defend their faith. Strengthens the believer's faith. Makes the Bible relevant to the unbeliever because now we show them we have answers. And equips parents to train and protect their children. Very important for parents to get this. Here's one of the scriptures that teaches we all have to do this. 1 Peter 3:15. But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and be ready. How often? Yes, always to give an answer to every man that asks you a reason and hope that's in you with meekness and fear. We are told to be ready always to give an answer or the word there, defense of the faith. Always. The word apologia, Greek, for having a defense, a verbal defense. That's where we get apologetics from. Jude 3. It was necessary for me to write to you and exhort you that ye should earnestly contend for the faith which once delivered unto the saints. We are told to contend for our faith. That word contend in the Greek is where we get our word agonize. In other words, we are told to agonize over our faith, not take it lightly. We are told to have ready answers, be able to defend our faith. These are biblical mandates to do this. Then we have 2 Corinthians 10:4-5. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. We are told there to bring down strongholds. Anything that's keeping people from accepting Jesus Christ, we need to know how to break those strongholds down. And one of those strongholds is evolutionism. That is a very big stronghold. which includes billions of years of time, is a stronghold, because it is not in the Bible. There are three scriptures. 1 Peter 3:15, Jude 3, and 2 Corinthians 10:4 and 5. All mandated. We need to know how to do this. And if you as parents know how to do this, then you can train your children and stop the 70% casualty rate. Ron Luce, in his book, Battle Cry for a Generation, I can't think of a more urgent need than enabling young people to understand their faith and preparing them to defend it against the onslaught of secular thought they encounter in their schools and in popular culture. He works with youth all the time. And what is he saying? We've got to train these youth on how to answer these questions. Ben Shapiro. He's been on national TV many times. Got his law degree at Harvard, his undergraduate at UCLA. Talked with him on several occasions. This is a very smart man. Very smart man. He's been on Fox News Channel quite a few times. Professors consistently champion the liberal line. But why do students buy it? Why don't they resist the indoctrination efforts of the university faculty? And he says, the obvious answer is youthful naivety. The innocence of college students blinds them to the motives of their professors. Students take everything at face value instead of examining professorial bias. Students also lack, get this, the tools, skills, and knowledge to challenge their professors. Why is that? There's absolutely no reason for that to happen. What it means is we, the church, I'm not talking about the building now, but we as Christians, which is the church body, have not done our job. Now, I'll let you know point blank, my generation completely failed. My generation is part of the reason we're in this trouble, because we forgot to educate. We thought if we just read the Bible, went to church on Sunday, everything would be just fine. Hand over our children, the church will take care of it, the Christian school will take care of it. Guess what? They didn't. Who's the number one teacher in a child's life? Parents. So it ultimately comes back to us, doesn't it? It's our job to make sure we don't lose our children to the world. I've had too many parents come to me in tears on this issue. They raised their son and daughter in the church, sent them off to school. Now their son and daughter won't even talk to them. They've left the church. They think the church is foolishness. Don't let that happen. You can stop it if you want. But are you willing to do that? It's not going to happen automatically. Don't put the burden on the church. They are there to help. But the burden lies on the parents to do this. We need to get ourselves educated. Yeah. Now I want to show you a little thing on critical thinking. Let's start preparing ourselves. Is evolution a fact?
Nope.
Well, that ends this chapter. Let's go to the last chapter now. I like simple answers. I love to train high school students and junior hires. Next year at the homeschool convention, the state homeschool convention is going to be at Northern Nazarene University? NNU. Northwest. NNU. They're going to have the homeschool convention. They gave me a whole day. I get to do 5 talks to the youth. Now I'm going to tell those youth when they walk in there, when they go out of there, they're going to know more than their parents. I get 5 presentations. Then on the open session, I get to do 2 or 3 presentations there. But I'm going to train these youth how to think critically. And here's one of the things I'm going to teach them. And that is 3 powerful questions you can ask a non-believer, an evolutionist. Not one of these has a scientific term in it. Question number 1, how do you know it's true? That forces them to tell you where they got their information from. Most of it get off the internet. What do we know about that? Not real reliable. How do you know it's true? Has it ever been observed? And are you making any assumptions? In an hour, I can have every one of the students know all 3 of those. They'll have it memorized. It's called disguised repetition. Those 3 questions are very powerful questions to ask them an evolutionist. How do you know it's true? Has it ever been observed? Are you making any assumptions? Can anybody Anybody have all three of them? Anybody tell me all three of them? Go ahead. How do you know it's true? Go ahead.
Just read them up.
Yeah.
Has it ever been observed in our evening comedians?
Very good. Thank you. I just want somebody to hear a different voice than me all the time. Yes. How do you know it's true? Has it ever been observed to make any assumptions? How many assume you weren't allowed to look at it again? Yeah, careful of those assumptions. How many can give me one of them now? How do you know it's true? Very good. Has it ever been observed? Are you making any assumptions? This is what I do with the youth. Then what do the youth, what I do, as they say, I'll have a number one, number two, and number three. I'll just assign around number one, number two, and number three. And I have this hour-long presentation, and I make sure I do this one of the first things I do. Then all through the rest of the hour, I'll just stop at any point and say, number one. And they'll say, how do you know it's true? Number two, is it everyone observed? Number three, and they'll say they're one also. And I'll keep doing that. I at least have three people that will know one of them for sure. But then about halfway through, I'll switch and get another three people. And what's happening now? They're hearing this over and over and over again. And now here's another way I teach. It's called being the principle of being a loose cannon. They don't know what you're going to do next, so they're going to be paying attention. Because they don't know where they're going to choose another three people somewhere there. So they're constantly listening. They don't want to be caught unawares. So those are all tactics you can use in education. But I'll let you know one thing. Don't ever, ever embarrass anybody in class. How many are introverts here? I am one. Very strong introvert. My wife will testify to that. And I understand how introverts worked in there. If you embarrass an introvert in class, you've probably lost them. Be very careful how you approach. In other words, Joe, give me an answer. That's the wrong thing to do in education, folks, unless you know that person very well. Don't be doing things like that. Has anybody missed anything yet in here? Probably not really. I liked it. We've been doing pretty good. We've got a lot of good answers. So how do you know it's true? Has it ever been observed? Are you making any assumptions? Now, here's the one more. We've already had this one. Now, here's what I do. I get the three critical thinking questions down. We've heard it about 10 or 12 times already. But I have a fourth one. Now, why don't you just do all four? Because how the mind works. See, the mind works in groups of three very well. But for some reason, when a fourth thing gets in there, you do four at once, clutter comes in. It gets very hard. But the mind just seems to be set up for three or less, very easy. So this is how I do this. It's understanding how the brain works, how the mind works. Three we can do. So I get that down, then I bring in the fourth. We've already seen that one. How much of the fossil was actually found? How much was drawn in by the artist? And you see, this is not the first time you've heard this one, is it? So it's not so hard now, is it? You've already heard this one. So it's not so hard to tack on to the previous three. And then I assign my number four person. And every time I talk about, give me a critical thinking question about fossils, they're saying theirs. So by the time I finish, they've heard a lot of these things many, many times. Yes?
But isn't number four really a compilation of the first three?
Yes, it is. Just worded differently.
I just want to make sure. Yes.
But I wanted something specific for fossils because they're being snookered over and over again by the pictures in the textbooks. Okay, let's take a look at here. Here's a quote from a textbook. For instance, modern whales are the descendants of four-legged land animals. That's a quote from a textbook. Now, I'm going to prove this to you. I'm now going to prove to you whales evolved from a land mammal. There's the evidence right from the textbook. Anybody convinced? You ought to hear my talk on aliens, UFOs, and the Bible. I'll convince you, because I got lots of pictures of flying saucers. That's about what they are, flying saucers. Things you eat them. But there's the evidence. Doesn't that convince you? What are these pictures? Pictures drawn by artists. That's all they are. Let me show you another real example. Here's a creature called Pachycetus, still in some textbooks. But this is one of their famous cases of whale evolution. Now, I added the words artist reconstruction down there, because that's the picture that's right in the book, Science Journal. Pacasitas, candidate for whale evolution. How much of the fossil was actually found? How much was drawn in by artists? Well, all they found were these shaded portions of the skull. That's all they found in the entire body. That's not science at all, is it, folks? That's evolutionism, but not science. Yes, Leslie.
It's got to be true, though, because we saw it at the Smithsonian.
Yes, that convinced me. I saw it at the Smithsonian. It was true. Yeah, they had all this stuff still at the Smithsonian. And what's sad is you hear these people walk by, and they're just goggled by all this wonderful science, how we evolved.
And teaching their children.
Yes. Well, they did find the rest of the fossil that went with this creature. That's the bone construction. The other part's kind of drawn. We don't know what the fur or hair looked like, what color it was. But the bone structure we did find, that doesn't look like a water creature at all, does it? It's a land mammal. Complete misinformation again by the evolutionists. But yet, that is still in some of the textbooks. A lot of times the shape, the way that bones are constructed. Reptiles are slightly different. The tailbone and things are different than mammals. Because reptiles have a much stronger tailbone because they use it a lot. How do you know it's true? Has it ever been observed? Make any assumptions. Are you ready for the real power question now? This is one of your big five. The power question. I use this all the time. And you can adapt this question to any area. Power question. Show me any observational evidence for evolution that does not require me to use faith. Notice that. Show me any observational evidence for evolution that does not require me to use faith. There are two key words in here. Observational and faith. If you remember that, you'll get the question. Observational faith. Two key words in there. You ready for a quiz? Show me any that does not require me to use faith. See how easy that was. Even this time in the afternoon. Okay, that's critical thinking questions. The other thing I train on critical thinking is don't focus on the evidence so much. We get so caught up. They give all this powerful evidence, and I want to give an evidence answer back. No, you don't have to do that most of the time. Focus on their words and hold them accountable to the words they used. And you'll immediately put them on the defense. I do that a lot, and I don't have to answer a lot of questions. Who did that in the Bible? Answered a question with a question. Jesus. Very good tactic. I don't use it all the time. You don't want to use it all the time. But it comes in very handy a lot of times. I've done it in debates, and I've done it in secular universities. Because when I go to secular universities, I know what's going to happen. They can't wait to pounce on me and ridicule me and discredit everything I've done. You know what? I look forward to that. Yes. Yeah, I go into these things with a lot of prayer, but I look forward to that time. Because I can usually answer their questions. But my tactic is they ask me a question, I'm going to ask them a question. They can't answer mine. Or if they ask me a question, I focus on their words, then turn it right around on them. For example, I'll give you an example here. Finished at a secular university, my talk. And there's a student back there, and all the professors there used to be an arrogant. A student reads from the Bible. Wow. We're not a Christian at all. Just found that out real fast. And he read where people live to be 900 years old in the Bible. Read it for him. Then he asked me this question. Do you believe people live to be 900 years old? I know what he was waiting for, some technical answer. How we could possibly live to be that old. But no, that wouldn't have solved anything. My response kind of stunned him a little bit. I said, yes, I believe people live to be 900 years old, don't you? It kind of took him aback. He wasn't expecting that. And he said, no. Now, who's in charge of this conversation? I am. And I said, well, why not? Then he lost the conversation. He said, it's never been observed. The next question I asked him, do you believe that life originated by naturalistic processes? Being an evolutionist, he had to say yes. And he did say yes. And I asked him a question. Did you ever observe that? Guess what he had to say? No. Did he just contradict himself? Yes. I didn't have to say a word now. It was over. I showed him the contradiction in his own thinking. That's apologetics right there, folks. Getting down to the core. That's what we do in some of our other courses. Train you to do that. Can you imagine our students being like that? Can you imagine two or three Christians in a biology classroom asking good science questions that the teacher can't answer, but doing it politely? What witness that would have to the rest of the students? That this evolution stuff is not all what it's claimed to be. All right, how about this one? Cain. Got Adam and Eve. Cain and Abel. Who's available being Cain's wife?
Sister.
Oh, wait, it had to be. There was no sisters there. It had to be some hairy ape woman, didn't it? Because if you had ape men, you had to have hairy ape women. You had to shave too. Now, you're right. Adam and Eve. The Bible does answer the question. In Genesis chapter 5, verse 4, it says of Adam and Eve, they had other sons and daughters. Plural, sons and daughters. So, can I pick on you just a little bit? Okay, good, good. Did you hear what she said? She is telling us that Cain married his sister. Ladies and gentlemen, she is teaching, the Bible teaches incest, and God condones that. That's an embarrassment. She's saying incest. The Bible teaches incest. I saw this on the History Channel, and that's exactly what they did on the History Channel. Talked all about the Bible being an embarrassment because it condones incest. What are you going to do about that? I just said your Bible teaches incest.
Context.
Cain married somebody.
I'd simply say so. Back then, genetics, DNA was perfect.
Very good. Very good.
Genetics, yes. Is only necessary when you have the allele that is detrimental.
I'm going to take 20 push-ups on. Now you're at 70. That person next to you is at 80.
I failed to keep the time. I'm 3 minutes past time.
Oh, gosh. We have a known failure in class. But you know what? You can repent, and God will forgive you.
If there's anybody in here who is a professional certificate holder for teaching, and you need a CEU, we offer one for today.
Christian, are you a Christian school teacher to teach now in Christian school?
With a professional certificate.
All our courses are certified through ACSI for continuing education units. We go above their standards. Next week, all those teachers that come, you get a continuing education unit in education for that. Yeah, we make sure we stay up on that. That's a benefit we give. You don't have to pay a cent for it. That comes with part of the class. So let's go ahead and take, you feel like 9 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, let's take 9 minutes. You need a good